I heard a few of you snicker when he said, a capable wife, who can find? As if Proverbs was written by a bunch of guys, you know, sitting around having coffee and lamenting, you know, just how things hadn't worked out for them the way they'd hoped. If it's any consolation, some commentators say, well look, they said it's hard to find a woman of virtue, but they didn't even bother trying to find a man, you know. We come to the conclusion of Proverbs, and I will say more about all of that. I think there's another way of understanding those words. The translations are so... Why am I a better translator, Annabelle? Why is that? You know, a capable wife. That's not even in the Hebrew. It's a virtuous woman. Where they got capable from, I don't know. We come to the conclusion of Proverbs. And it's usual for us to come to an end of something, an end of a book, and we think of it as a summary, a conclusion, a final word that will help us tie everything together. Proverbs ends with a story of what a great life looks like. A virtuous, noble, worthy, honored, and glorious life. What it looks like. Now, almost all the Proverbs that we read about are these sort of, they're not stories at all, they're these little pithy sayings. But here Proverb takes all of them and plunks them down in a life lived, in a story. And almost all of those individual Proverbs can be lived out by a woman or a man, but in a few places it's essential for us to keep in mind that this book was written to young men. In the first few chapters, 20 times it says, my son, my son, my son. Never once does it say, my daughter. Now, even though the teaching within it is applicable to men and women, it's helpful to remember that context. This is a word to my son. And therefore, isn't it fascinating that the Proverbs chose as a final and full example of a life well lived, as a heroic life, of a noble life, not a man for these sons, but a woman's life for these sons? You'll remember the sermons over this past summer on laziness. This is not a woman who is lazy. This, you'll remember Chris's sermon, that we must be both people who reflect and know, but then also live it out. She considers and acts. She is a woman who lives in the fear of the Lord. She is faithful in her satisfied marriage, and she has enough food and money and clothing, and she uses the excess to take care of the needs of others and gives away in charity. She is living out all the things we've talked about over this summer. Now, all the simple ideas that we repeat to one another somewhat about the past, how women used to be viewed and how they used to be valued and their roles and how they were treated, they're always, I find, often at any rate, challenged as soon as we actually pick up an ancient text and read it. And what might the stereotype of a patriarchal document be? If it was written to sons, what might you expect to be said about a wife? Well, that she's in the home, that she's maybe submissive and beautiful, nurturing, taking care of children. And we open up this ancient document, when we open up God's word, what does God say to us? Verse 30, don't reduce a woman to her looks, my son. No. The virtuous woman ensures everyone in the household, husband, children, servants, are fed and clothed. But this woman speaks and teaches, and she is a hard worker. Twice she is called strong. She manages the staff in the morning, and then she goes out. Proverbs describes how she conducts her business deals with merchants, buying and selling food and clothing. As she conducts business deals, buying property, she creates and executes a business plan, expanding the household business, working at all of this of her own initiative and on her own authority. The husband is sitting at the gates of the city. In fact, there seems to be little left for him to do. In the NRSV and in Derek's translation, it was the capable wife. As I said, I think this is one of the worst translations possible. What do you hear when you hear capable wife? As if what is being described is that their ability at being married. But this is about a woman who is living out virtues, living out and embodying wisdom. This is just the life of a woman, a worthy woman, and using other translations, a noble woman, or the authorized version, a virtuous woman. Especially the King James, which stands at a point in history where the old way of looking at the world and at life and of virtue was still in view. And now things have changed. There's something that is lost to us whenever we pick up the heroic epics, whenever we pick up Proverbs. There's an idea that is just lost to us that was true in the ancient world. Success and strength and fame, we might say, and glory, all of that could not be separated from character. You might be muscular. You might be good with a sword. But if you were greedy, you could not be excellent. You might have been a leader of some kind, but if you were filled with lust and controlled by it, if you were cowardly or foolish or dishonest or lazy, you could not be great or excellent. Also lost in our translation is that all of these descriptors of the woman are in the past tense. As if this is her obituary, as if this is her funeral and her friends and family have stood up to said, this is how she lived her life, right to the end. As if the woman's life had to be over and complete in order to give a final word on whether she was virtuous and whether she was noble and worthy. Also lost in the English, it's an acrostic. Every letter of each verse begins with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet. In other words, this woman is the A to Z of a virtuous life. Excellence, worthiness, virtue. This is caught up in how a whole life is lived in all of its aspects, beginning to end. As we read this woman's life, of course we are overwhelmed, men and women. None of us could live that. In some ways, she must be a composite, an idea of what we could aspire toward. And we might ask ourselves, when our lives come to their end, how will we be described? What will people say about how we have lived? This virtuous woman's life is the goal of all the Proverbs. These are not just little sayings that you trot out, you bring out once in a while. These little Proverbs are meant to be memorized, to be eaten, to be put into our hearts and minds. They're meant to change how we think as we go about our daily lives. Proverbs must be lived out. It is a book, as I said, written to young men, my son. Another part of the, as sort of, you know, eyebrow raising as a capable wife who can find, as much as that makes us raise our eyebrows, when you read through the first 8 chapters, there's a recurring character that is also a little upsetting for us in these days. One of the main characters in chapters 1-8 is the woman who entices men to be unfaithful. We meet her in chapter 2, in chapter 5, in chapter 6, and in chapter 7. In the NRSV, she is the adulteress, a woman dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent. With persuasive words, she leads the young man astray. She just seduces him with her smooth talk. The wayward woman with her seductive words. The lips of the adulterous woman drip honey. Her speech is smoother than oil. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. Other translations use the phrase the immoral woman, the strange woman, the seductress, the evil woman. This is not meant to be misogyny, as if women were always the one to blame. And if it's innocent boys, and if only these nasty women didn't come along and lead them astray. It is fine to read it as literally a warning against adultery. But there is something deeper going on here, something that is meant to speak right to our hearts. Set against this seductress is another woman, wisdom. And all of chapter 8 is devoted to this woman's words, the words of wisdom. Does not wisdom call? Does she not raise her voice? I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently find me. The seductress calls to the young man in the street, but wisdom calls as well. Come to me and love me. This book, written to young men, therefore, uses their love and their desires for women as an analogy for the wisdom of getting through life. My son, understand this. There is a deep attraction to what is wrong. It will pull on your heart. It will seem like the right thing to do. But be alert and be aware of this desire, of the longing for wrong. Be ready for the pull towards pleasure and laziness and self-importance. It is all folly and death. But my son, there is also within you a desire for wisdom, a desire for life and truth and being right with God and right with others. There is a fulfillment, a release in wisdom and giving yourself over to wisdom. By putting it this way for young men, it teaches all of us, men and women, that our hearts are going to be pulled in two ways. We have to choose. One path leads to death, and the other to life. One path leads to yourself and being an idiot. The other path leads to being right with other people and right with the land and right with God. By putting it all this way for young men, Proverbs does something more. By equating a life of wickedness and folly with a man having an affair and a life of wisdom to a man being in love and faithful to woman wisdom, it suggests that we are not intended to use that marriage language. We are not intended for wickedness and death, but rather God intended us for love of wisdom. And every time we deviate as human beings from living well, from living virtuously, from living wisely, just like a man breaking his marriage to sleep with another woman, we are violating what we are intended for, or better, for whom we are intended. Wisdom is our true spouse, our true love. God is our true love, the one to whom we are promised. Proverbs begins and ends by describing all of life, living well and living poorly, in terms of relationship. Our relationship with God, but our relationship with one another and all of creation. We are tempted, though, to read Proverbs as just these discrete little nuggets of wisdom, of ideas. We're tempted to reduce Proverbs to a set of rules. Much of the Old Testament we're tempted to call the law, even though the translation in Hebrew is the teaching, the writings. Modern Westerners want to treat these proverbs like laws of physics. If there's action and reaction, where we could say, if I do this, then this will happen. We want it to be true, and that by true we mean always true, that if it says this, it must always be the case, as if it were a law. How come when I live the way the Proverbs tells me, things don't work out? But by beginning the book of Proverbs with relationships, and by ending the book of Proverbs with the story of relationships, a woman living out her these relationships, the Proverbs show us the context for interpreting every one of those little sayings. It's all about right relationships. Being right with the land. Being right with animals. Being right with the city. Being right with neighbors and family, with poor and with rich, and right with God. These right relationships are described in terms of love and faithfulness. In the first 8 chapters, right relationship is to love wisdom and to avoid adultery with folly. And in the final chapter, we are given the picture of a woman, faithful and loving to her husband, to her children, to her employees, to the land, to business partners, to the merchants she buys things from. And over and above all of this, she is right with God. So let us read the Proverbs as Cheryl suggested, over and over again. Let it be part of our regular habits. And let us memorize them. But they have to be lived out. And they have to lead us to right relationship, or we're not reading them correctly. They must understand that they are meant to help us love God, and to love other people. They're meant to change how we think, to change how we love, so that we might be at rights with all things, with all people, and with God. Cherish wisdom, and she will exalt you. Embrace her, and she will honor you. It is not just that we are intended to love God, but God, over and over again, says that he loves us, that he loves you. In Proverbs 9, the voice of wisdom calls out. But through this voice, we should hear God, the one who is calling us. You that are simple, turn in here. To those without sense, wisdom says, come and eat of my bread and the wine that I have mixed. As we come to this meal, may we hear through Proverbs God inviting us to come and to be right with God through Jesus Christ. Invited into a life where we are right with one another and right with all creation. As you come forward later this morning to receive this bread, may you hear God calling you to love him, to embrace him. To God be the glory. Amen.